These are interesting times for the Founding Fathers. We're in the midst of a wholesale rethink about their legacies as they relate to slavery, especially on American campuses. Now, this is true, of course, of Thomas Jefferson, author of the Declaration of Independence and slave owner. Annette Gordon-Reed is a Harvard professor and Pulitzer Prize-winning writer who wrote the definitive history of Sally Hemings, the enslaved woman with whom Jefferson had a long-term relationship. Peter Onuf is a professor emeritus at the University of Virginia, which Jefferson founded, and a senior fellow at Monticello's International Center for Jefferson Studies. Together, they've co-authored a new book, Most Blessed of Patriarchs, Thomas Jefferson and the Empire of the Imagination. I spoke with them recently and began by asking them why they decided to work on this new biography together.
Well, we've been friends since the mid-1990s when my first book came out, and we've been engaged in a very long conversation about Jefferson. And as Peter was thinking about retiring, I thought we should...
She wouldn't let me.
Just one last time to come together and to sort of put down on paper a lot of the things that we've been discussing over the past couple of decades. So it just seemed like a natural thing to do.
I mean, Jefferson is one of the most written about founding fathers already. So what aspect of him, the man, was left to discover other than maybe all of him?
Well, the first thing to say is that all Jefferson scholars are not created equal. We have different expertise, and our pair of expertise brought together, we think, offers a fresh perspective. Here's the short answer to your question. We think that the false distinction between Jefferson's public life and the things he said, as in the Declaration of Independence, and his private life, that's a false distinction. We're trying to put Jefferson back together again to show how his ideas grow out of his life experiences.
And we're also trying to move the discussion beyond fixating on hypocrisy, which is a usual thing you do now. It's a sort of a shutdown word that keeps people from actually thinking about Jefferson, we think, in a productive kind of way.
Yeah.
And so we wanted to move the ball a little bit further down the field than we've been stuck for the past couple of decades.
Well, so I want to come back to this notion about how we see him today in just a moment. But let's first of all uncover or explore a little bit of what you write in the book. I mean, the title, though, itself, Most Blessed of Patriarchs, that comes from a letter that Jefferson himself wrote in, 1793?
Yes.
Doesn't it seem a little strange to you that the great icon of democracy would call himself
a patriarch?
Yeah. We thought that was striking, and we thought that was an opening to take a closer look at Jefferson. Why would he say that? This is in the midst of a career devoted to the Republican experiment that's going to change the world, and he seems to be glorying in the fact that he is the lord of his domain. He has control over everything and everybody there. That seems like a big disconnect. So rather than talk about hypocrisy, let's talk about how those two things work together.
Because he thought they worked together. And so a lot of the book is trying to say, in essence, it's not what we think Jefferson ought to be doing, but what he thought he was doing in the world and how things made sense to him. He is in control of 5,000 acres of land, a couple of hundred enslaved people, a white family. As the male, he is the head of the family. And he's thinking about the privileges that he has, but he also is thinking about responsibilities that he has to people. So it's the whole ball of wax there. Mm-hmm. It's a very, very large sense of, and I think I would have to say, a very realistic sense of the power relations that existed between him and other people.
So I guess this brings forward the question that I was going to come to a little bit later, because we see it as hypocrisy now. Perhaps another word, or some people see it, another word may be contradiction.
Yeah.
But was he a contradiction even in his own time? Because many people would point to George Washington, who in his will emancipated his slaves.
He had to be dead first, of course, you understand.
But Jefferson did not do that for his own slaves, except for the children he had with Sally Hemings.
Yes, and some of their relatives. Well, Washington is an interesting case. When he died and provided for the emancipation of slaves upon Martha's death, there were some people who thought that was sort of a cop-out, that he had enormous political capital, and he spent none of it on the issue of slavery while he was alive. The children, he had no children of his own. He had stepchildren whom he loved, but he also knew that they were part of the Custis family and that the slaves that Martha owned would come to them. I mean, I'm glad Washington freed his slaves, but if you look at the situation, he knew that they were going to have slaves even after Martha died, because she had dower slaves from her previous husband. The Custis family was extremely wealthy. They would be well taken care of.
Yeah,
so it's easy to do
in
that situation.
And it's important to keep in mind that Jefferson did know that slavery was unjust, and he had a solution. It's not a solution that we recognize as legitimate. It was never going to happen. And that decision would be emancipate and expatriate. Send people away to a country of their own. This, the unfriendly word for this is deportation, or we might even think of things like genocide. It's horrible. But for Jefferson, it's
well,
doing
I wouldn't
justice.
Say genocide. Black yeah, people can live without white people.
yeah, exactly right. Yeah. But the idea is that, and this is a wonderful phrase from his notes on the state of Virginia, his only book. He says in his plan for emancipation, we will send them someplace, it would turn out, maybe Africa, and we would, that is the white people, the people who had votes, the citizens, the legislators of Virginia, would declare them a free and independent people, which is a wonderful reversal of the mm-hmm. declaration that Jefferson mm-hmm. is so famous for writing. And the active agents of that quest for independence would be whites, not blacks, because, of course, the danger was that there would be a servile insurrection. We don't want to encourage that sort of thing. That's why we have to keep the peoples apart.
Mm. There would be a race war.
Yeah.
If you emancipated blacks, you know, Peter's exactly right. If you emancipated blacks without expatriation, there would be conflict, and there would, you know, they couldn't live together in peace. And eventually there would be a race war.
Yeah.
And I often say scoff at that, but you look at what has happened.
How well have we done?
And what have we done since then? I mean, we've had tremendous conflicts from then until now, even though we reject his solution.
What would be your response to someone today? And there are many people who still would come to you and say, okay, most blessed of patriarchs, take your point, Jefferson, a man of his time, in his time, but I still see him as a hypocrite. Because, I mean, even the things that we've been talking about, he was maybe a little too easy given the difference between American reality and what he wanted. Well, I mean, how do you argue against that?
You might ask a different question, and that is, how would somebody ever imagine a political system, a world based on the principle of equality? You have to lift yourself beyond your own circumstances. And this is what we call him to account for, because he could see something. He could imagine that nature enjoined and nature's God enjoined us to form governments based on affection, attachment, consent. And that vision, you say, well, it's impossible because he lived in the midst of slaves and it's not an equal society. But ask the question of how could he transcend his times? We hate him for what we love him for. That is, that he could say these things, and we say, you can't say these things. You didn't live them.
I mean, with that in mind, it was at the University of Virginia, the college and university that he founded. I mean, he wanted on his headstone, mm-hmm. Father of the University of Virginia, where there was a movement to remove or rethink whether or not a statue of Jefferson should be on the campus.
To me, that's an easier question. People often ask me about that. It depends on the person. I mean, you can't have the University of Virginia without Jefferson. So it would be sort of, bizarre if people thought that they could just sort of, you know, disappear him from that particular campus.
Or overall, on American campuses, there mm-hmm. is this push mm-hmm. now to rethink whether or not that these particular founding fathers should have such places of honor and respect on campuses.
No, it's we need to do understand and engage our own history. That's all we're saying. And you can't have that history without the founders. Now, we don't worship the founders, but we know they're there, and we have to engage with them. If I could have reversed events and not had an American Revolution, I'd vote against the American Revolution, because it really institutionalized slavery and gave it a new lease on life. If you want to get into that kind of counterfactual argument, I'll go there with you. But you got this country, and it offers you opportunities to do things, to craft your own vision, to make things different, and give them their credit.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with all of that. You have to. Their reality is belongs to us. We can't walk away from that any more than you can walk away from the country.
Wasn't it Jefferson himself who said the earth belongs to the living?
Yes. It's up to us.
Well, Annette Gordon Reed and Peter Onuf are co-authors of the new book, Most Blessed of the Patriarchs, Thomas Jefferson and the Empire of the Imagination. Thank you both so very much for coming in today. It was a real pleasure to speak with you.
You bet.